Oh, that's right. It's Tuesday afternoon, 4:07 in the afternoon. And let me tell you this, the rain came pouring down over on our side of the town. I don't know about everybody else, but Gracie is in the closet because she hates thunderstorms. But I have a great show for you here today. We have our fire chief for the city of Greenwood, Terry Strange. How you doing today?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Very good. Very good. Certainly is good to sit down and be able to get filled in on some of the things that are involved in being firefighters and being a fire chief. Now, you grew up here in Greenwood. What did you want to be when you grew up?
I actually wanted to be a policeman.
A policeman?
A policeman. Sure did.
Well, what happened?
They didn't have any job openings, and I was getting ready to get married, so...
You needed a job?
I needed a job. My father-in-law was very insistent that I needed to get a job, so...
If you were going to get married, you had to have a job, yes.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
So what happened?
Well, they didn't have any openings. The personnel director at City Hall said she knew that the fire department was hiring and said, would you like to try it? And I said, sure, I've never thought about that before, and... Went over and fell in love with it, and I guess the rest is history.
That's pretty amazing, isn't it? Just to walk, you wanted to be a policeman, you walked over next door, and then you'd found a career, and here you are today as a fire chief.
I actually feel like there was a divine hand in moving me the direction I went. So
yeah.
I don't think it was just happenstance. I think it someone pushed me that direction. So.
Well, I mean, starting out, so you really rose up through the ranks because you were – a firefighter, right, when you
That's
first
correct.
Went to work, and you had no experience in this, so you had to be totally trained.
That's right. I mean, when I first went there, about the only training you got initially was they said they'd point at the fire truck and said, you see that big red truck? If it moves, get on it. And that was about the training I got. And then later on, I had an opportunity to go to the fire academy and all to get the training I needed. There was a lot of on-the-job training back then. Of course, a lot of things have changed. Since then as well.
Things keep changing, Terry, don't they?
Oh, they do. They do.
Well, what about riding on the back of the fire trucks and everything? I mean, you know, that was a traditional image that you saw.
It was. And it was a true experience, I can promise you.
A true experience?
Yes, to be able to ride back there, especially like the thunderstorm we just had, when you're riding back there with all the rain beating you in the face and the lightning bolts and... But it was an experience that unfortunately has gone by the wayside since then because it is a safety issue. We have had firefighters that actually fail off the back of the trucks, but
and what, the trucks just keep rolling? They had to get to the fire.
Yeah, I mean, quite honestly.
Yeah, I was thinking, yes.
Quite honestly, you'd kind of look and see, yeah, they're up, they're moving, they look okay, and
we got
a bigger responsibility down the road, so.
Wow, so you hung on for dear life, right?
Exactly, you better,
better. Now, did you ever have a Dalmatian? I just need to know, did the Greenwood Fire Department
We never had a Dalmatian. There was a long time ago, there was a Cocker Spaniel.
Okay.
That was named Sandy that actually hung around at the old fire station downtown. Unfortunately, it actually got run over one day on the way to when a call came in. It ran out in the road and got run over. But
By the fire truck?
No, it wasn't by the fire
okay.
truck.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
We haven't anything since.
Now, you have one of the things I know that you have down there. You have a very old pumper, don't you?
It's an old steamer.
Steamer. And it is beautiful.
Yes, it is. The city purchased that from Charleston back in, I want to say, 1907. It was way back.
Mm-hmm.
It was modified to be pulled by a horse, but it was originally pulled by a fireman. It was set up for them to get the steamer, actually pull it to the fire, and then fight fire.
Wow.
After all that. So they were some tough guys back then.
Yeah. But did they ever use it here, or was it just for why did they buy it?
Originally, at one point, it was put into service when we bought it from Charleston.
Oh, okay.
But over the years, it just kind of, you know, stayed and became a centerpiece for our museum. We have a little museum there at the main station that my assistant chief, Robbie Stevenson, put together. And it has a lot of older stuff in it. I won't call it old, but...
Well, I just think that piece is so neat, and it's beautiful. I mean, you guys keep it up beautifully. I've seen it at some of the displays and whatnot that they've had.
They've done a wonderful restoration on it. Originally, it was at the museum, And we had it on loan to them, and it got to the point that they were running out of room, so we offered to take it back to the station. Connie Maxwell actually helped us out with it. They had two of their large white horses come down there, and they hooked them up, and it was kind of a nostalgic thing to see that rolling back through town again with two horses pulling it. So.
Wow. That's cool. But now, as far as our firefighters here in Greenwood, how many firefighters do we have? Now, we need to make this that this is for the city of Greenwood. This doesn't do to do with the outside the city with the volunteer fire department, correct?
That's correct. It's just inside the city limits. We have a total of 48 in the department. I have 45 shift personnel. Our shift personnel are on 24 hours, and they're off for 48. There's a 15-man shift per shift. So on duty today, you know, we may have one or two people off, but we normally have anywhere from 13 to 15 personnel on shift, 24 hours, manning trucks at three different stations.
And how? And so they actually stay there 24/7. There's
yes, they
bunks
do.
Or whatever to sleep in.
Yeah, it's just like home, just on a bigger scale.
Just like home. Well, do you have the pole? You got to go down.
We do have the pole at station one.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to have to come over there and try the pole one day.
Yeah, it's, we actually got three inside that one.
Wow.
But they're getting away from that now because of injuries.
Because of injuries?
Because of injuries. Believe it or not, if you're wet in any ways, you know, if you come back from a fire and you take a shower, if your skin is wet in any way, it's just like sliding down nothing. You have no way of stopping yourself. So it's just, you might as well just jump in the hole. That's about it. But so over the years, people have been hurt sliding that pole. So.
Wow. It still is kind of romantic, for
lack
of a better way to
say
it.
That's what you always see in the movies, is the firemen coming down the pole. So.
Now, the type of equipment that they use today, are our firefighters safe? I mean, you know, it wasn't long ago that out in Arizona, where we saw that horrible, where the men were killed and they were covered with this protective covering that just didn't hold up. How about our firefighters?
Yes, we have, we call it bunker gear. Our firefighting gear that we wear now is as close to the top of the line as you can get. And it will protect you. But it's like anything, probably just like the guys out in Arizona, it's going to protect you to a certain extent. And then after that, it's going to start to degrade. So our personnel are always cognizant when they're inside of a structure about changes and the heat that they can feel. We've come a long way from when I first started. When we went in to fight a fire, we didn't wear air packs like we do now. If it was during the day, all I wore was a coat and a helmet and a pair of gloves. I had on polyester pants and patent leather shoes.
Patent leather shoes?
Patent leather shoes, because that was the shoes that we wore then.
Right. That was order. Yeah.
We were some fashion-conscious firemen, I'll tell you that.
No wonder you slipped off the back of the back of the fire truck there. I understand now. Yeah okay.
So, and then we would actually go in and fight the fire, and once we got the fire knocked down, somebody else would put on an air pack and go in and finish. And back then, they called them smoke eaters. That's what we were. Fortunately, people started realizing that wasn't the smart thing to do. So we have evolved and we have changed to where we have, like I said, top-of-the-line bunker gear that covers from head to toe. Our boots are designed not only to protect us from something that may fall, like on our toes, but we also have steel shanks so that nothing will puncture our boots. The gloves, we have Nomex hoods that go over our heads.
How much does the gear weigh? I mean, you know, when you're
probably
fully dressed.
60, 65 pounds.
60, 65 pounds,
yes.
On top of your own weight, and
yeah.
You're trying to go out there and fight
and
a fire.
Yes.
I bet you're exhausted if you are fighting a fire at the
end.
Yeah,
it doesn't take them long, but they will amaze you how well that they can perform. I mean, your adrenaline is so high. They train for this on a daily basis. So they're up for the challenge, and they do extremely well. It is amazing to watch them. It really is. But we've, like I said, with the gear and all that we've got, it protects us for a longer period of time. Fires have changed. When I first started in this business, you know, you basically had a cotton-type fire. Everything was made of cotton.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with so many synthetics that are out there, you've got a hodgepodge of all kind of chemicals in the air.
And what does that mean as far as when you're fighting a fire?
The different type chemicals, back when it was just what they call a cotton smoke, it was damaging to us. We didn't realize that, but we felt like that we could breathe some of that in. Nowadays, the atmosphere is so toxic that you can't be in there for any length of time at all.
Does it also have anything to do with the temperature of the fire? Does that make a difference?
Oh, yes. I mean, you know, the temperatures in a fire at ceiling level can be anywhere between 700 to 1,000 degrees. You get on down on floor level, you know, you're getting around about 300, 400, 500 degrees. So it'd be kind of like putting all this stuff on, turning your oven wide open and crawling inside your oven just to see what it's kind of like. But
you don't recommend we do that, though.
No, we don't recommend you do that at all. Okay. It's just the heat alone, you know, upwards of around 150 degrees and can disintegrate your lungs anyway. So
wow.
They'll just melt. So it doesn't take much to the heat. So
Well, I tell you what, we're going to hear a quick word from our sponsors. We'll be back. We are with our Fire Chief, Terry Strange. Don't you go away. If you happen to have a question, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We'll be right back.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Well, we are here with our Fire Chief, Terry Strange. I do need to mention that back in 2008, you were a recipient of the Fritz Turner Award as the top fire chief in the state. That was quite an honor, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. I was very surprised. I was asked to come down to the convention. Didn't know what they wanted me for, but I went down to the Fire Chiefs Convention and that was sprung on me that I was a recipient of that award. There's been some great people in the past that received that award, so I was very humbled. It was an emotional experience because that very same day, my first grandchild had been born.
Well, what an honor.
Our granddaughter was born, and so it was very emotional that day with that, and it was also the Fritz Turner Award.
So did we name her Fritzy?
No, we didn't. Her name is Rowan.
Rowan,
I did not name her Fritzy.
I just thought, you know, that would be kind of kismet here. That's right. Yes, that was the year your granddad got the award.
Yes. That's right.
That's pretty awesome, though.
Yes.
Now, who was Fritz Turner?
He was one of the first fire marshal for the state of South Carolina, and this award was named in his honor. So they've been giving this award out for a long time.
Well,
so I was very honored to receive it.
That's terrific. Now, you know, we think about our fire people that are on call, shall we say, sitting there in the firehouse just playing checkers, cooking up good food, you know, just waiting for it to be needed. Is that how it works today?
No, that's not how it works.
Well, what goes on then?
It hasn't worked for a long time. First and foremost, when they come in, they check their equipment. They make sure all the equipment's ready.
Even though the guys right before them might have checked it.
Even though the guys right before them did it, because the guys before them aren't the ones using it. So they check it all. They check their air packs. They check their firefighting gear that they wear. They check the trucks. Make sure they crank and all that good stuff, because we never know. Once they get done with checking all their equipment, then they've got building maintenance. They mop the floors and clean the toilets and do all the things that they probably should be doing at home. So
I see.
They have experience.
I guess then they also do the outside, the grass.
Oh, yes. We have certain days that they cut grass on. So they maintain. If painting needs to be done, they do the painting. We have guys that are experts in a lot of fields, that whether it's air conditioning or carpentry or something, they're always stepping up to help fix something there at the station. And then the rest of the time, most of the time, is devoted to training. They're constantly training. They've got to stay abreast of the latest standards and make sure that they're they're good to go when the bell rings, so to speak.
Well, don't they also do first responder activities to help out with the EMS?
They do medical first responders. We've been doing that for a few years now. I would hate to say it's unfortunate.
You get cats down out of trees, right?
No, we do not get cats down out of trees. We'll put that on the record right now. Yeah. We do not get cats down out of trees. As we tell them, you don't see a cat skeleton in the tree. So normally nature will take care of itself, and they get hungry enough, they'll come down. So we've had some firemen injured trying to do that. Plus, at the same time, I'm tying up a crew trying to get a cat down, and if your house is burning, which would you prefer I be doing at the time?
Taking care of the cat, of course.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Yeah, no. But, you know, they used to do that a lot, didn't they? I mean, I've done it in general.
I mean, we've done cats out of trees. We've gotten snakes out of houses. I've gotten squirrels out of houses. We even tried to capture a, trying to remember what kind of bird it was, but it was an expensive bird that had gotten out. And we were actually trying to use the water from the truck to wet it down enough that it finally landed where they could capture it. So we've done a little bit of everything. You know, usually when you call the fire department, we come. So.
But the fire department now is part of the 911, correct?
Well, it's the city of Greenwood.
Right.
The 911 center is actually owned by the county, but it services both the city and the county, where it shows in 96 as far as 911 calls.
But we do need to go on the record. You're not doing any of that stuff anymore, capturing birds,
no.
Squirrels, no. Cats, none of this
now,
kind of stuff.
Now, certainly, if somebody's life is endangered,
yes.
If there's an issue that we need to fix it, to make it go away, to keep you from getting hurt, then we will certainly do that.
What do you think? I mean, aren't we very fortunate here in our area, South Carolina, not to have the type of wildfires that we see in the West and everything? Can you imagine having to fight those type of fires?
No, I can't. That is a whole different mindset than what we're used to. You know, we see the house that's on fire. We can focus on it. We have, you know, pretty confident we know what it's going to do inside there. So we can kind of get in there and do what we need to do. And if we do need to escape, it should be fairly easy for us to get out. When they get out there on thousands and thousands of acres burning, and you've got firefighting crews that are just stuck all over the map, it's difficult to manage. And with a wildfire, I mean, it's called wild for a reason, it can turn on you at any minute.
Sure.
And the fire moves very quickly, a lot quicker than a man can. So it's hard to imagine just the managing the resources that it takes. You know, I know how difficult it is just to manage the resources on a fire, whether it's a commercial or whatever, but you get something of that magnitude, it's got to be tough.
Sure. And you know, then when you have to move people out of their homes very quickly because they don't have any time, one of the horrible things would be to have to make a decision what you can grab as you're walking out of your house.
Yeah, they have to sit there and say, well, what's important?
Right.
A lot of times that's difficult. And you would hope that people would be prepared. I would think they would be prepared, that they would have what I would call a go bag,
mm-hmm.
That has things in it that if, you know, you were to have to evacuate, you would take that with you. And it would be the same thing here. One thing we don't think about in our community as far as evacuation, but we have a very real potential of having to evacuate large areas of the city or the county. You know, with the number of train tracks that we have that come through town, we have anywhere from 30, 35 trains that come through here every day. You've got major highways that you have tractor trailers and tankers that are carrying all kinds of hazardous chemicals up and down the road.
Well, we've had some of that, particularly more towards Abbeville.
You're right.
Right,
yeah.
As far as...
And we are a part, our department is part of the statewide mutual aid, in where that if there is a major incident in the state and they call for assistance, we go. We sent crews to Graniteville when Graniteville had that train derailment. Mm-hmm. We were there for 3 or 4 days with people. We've sent them to Abbeville on numerous occasions. We've sent them to Lawrence on fires. We sent them to Aiken. We do have the potential, if we had to, would be to evacuate. And people need a go bag. When you go, if you have to evacuate, especially in the case of a hazardous chemical, it could be days. Do you have your medications? What do you do with your pets? Because when you go to a shelter, a lot of times those shelters are not set up to take a pet.
Oh, this is a discussion we're going to have to continue afterwards. Right now, it's time for the news. Don't you go away.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here. Sharp Facets Gallery. I am with the Fire Chief, Terry Strange. And, you know, Terry, you and I were just talking about being prepared to be have to evacuate. I mean, it's not something we think about here.
That's
certain
correct.
Areas of the country, they are have to be prepared because wildfires and, gosh, I mean, the stuff with sinkholes lately and stuff like that is really pretty scary. But do you think is it necessary to have something like that here in the Greenwood area?
To have what?
A go bag or something to be prepared?
Yeah, I would
prepared?
Think so. I mean,
do you have one at your house?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
You need to be concerned about... you need to have some simple things, change of clothes maybe. You need to be able to get your prescriptions very quickly if you need them, if you do have prescriptions. Because if you do have to go to a shelter, you're not sure if they're how quickly they're going to be able to provide you with anything. So just simple things. I mean, you don't need to pack like you're going away for 2 weeks, but you certainly need to have some things in place, and then you need to be...
Change in underwear, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah,
certainly,
that'd be a good thing, yeah.
You know, you can go back to what your mom always said, do you have clean underwear?
Right. Do you think moms say that today? I just wonder. I mean, you know, things have changed so much, Terry.
Yeah, I
don't
know.
I just don't know if they even ask that
priorities,
anymore.
Priorities, have changed. So, it's certainly needs to be a consideration. And there's a lot of resources online. The Red Cross has something online that has to deal with if you had to do it, go back. You know, if you had a tornado come through town or something of that nature and there was devastation like we've seen in other places, where are you going to go?
This morning I had an interview with one of the Doomsday Preppers. This is actually Doomsday Castle that, he's trying to get his family to build this Doomsday Castle. He's built the outline of it. There's a 2,000-square-foot bunker underneath it. It's built in the mountains of the Carolinas somewhere. And he was concerned about, like, solar flares, and if all the power went out, what would we actually do? How would we survive?
Well, we survived at one time without all that, so we'd have to go back to some of our
But do you think our kids could do this?
I certainly think they could adapt.
You think
I really
so?
Do.
That's what this whole show is about, teaching your children how to adapt.
After a period of time, I believe, we've always been very resilient. The human race. So we have a way of adapting when we need to. So,
well, it was interesting, and of course that actually premieres tonight at 10 o'clock on Nat Geo. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to follow that show. But, we are concerned about what to do if, and of course one of the other things that are issues here is, of course, our insurance.
Right.
And one of the things that you and I were talking actually off the air is about our ISO rating, which is a 2, which is very, very, very good.
Yes, ma'am.
And that helps with our insurance rates.
Yes, it does. I would say all insurance companies utilize it, but most of them utilize it. ISO will come in and rate the individual department. They will look at many factors. They'll look at the communication center to see how well that they handle the calls, whether they have enough personnel to handle the call volume, how quickly those calls are given to us. then they'll look at the department itself. They'll look at the equipment that we have, the training that we do. They'll look at the staff that we have, the number of people we have responding to calls, and the location of the fire departments in relation to the city. And then they also look at the water supply. And then based on that, you'll get a numerical rating, just like we did back in school. And that's how they get their ratings to determine what we are. We're in a very small percentage with the two. There's not many in the state, and certainly not many in the nation that have that.
So now that brings up a good question. How do you decide where a firehouse goes? I mean, we actually at one point had one closed down for a while, didn't we?
Yes, we did have to close that down. We for financial reasons, we were trying to look at saving some money a year or so ago when things got pretty tough, and you can't just keep raising taxes, so we had to try to find some
money. Well, you can. It's a question whether everybody can pay them is the question, Terry.
Well, but, yeah. We certainly got some good people up here making those decisions that they don't like doing it any more than you do because they're having to pay the taxes as well. So, but they did look at it. Hopefully it would save us some monies over a long period of time. I think we did it for about 6 months. We still had the same amount of personnel. We just moved them up to Station 1. We were trying to save some, you know, from the utilities and things of that nature. And it saved us some money. I don't remember the figures. But we finally realized that the savings that it was incurring was not the amount that we needed to keep the station closed. So we were able to open it back up.
So, and as far as deciding where a firehouse goes, what's the...
Well, when you sit down and you look at the residential, commercial, you have to look at all of it to determine where the fire stations go. When I first started with the department, we only had one station. Since then, we've been able to build two other stations. And we're certainly looking for growth in the future. As the city expands and as the population increases and more housing and stuff comes along, we certainly got to look at, but you not only have to build the station, you got to man the station, and so it's quite costly to do that. But we looked at it at the time where we needed to sit the stations based on the current population and impossible growth. So that's kind of where we're at right now, and we're looking for the future, hopefully, to expand in other directions. So,
within the city, is it supposed to be a certain amount of distance?
You try to have all portions of the city within a mile and a half of a fire station. Now, that's as the crow flies, not necessarily as the trucks go. Difficult to do. We do have the main station downtown, but as I said, as it expands and grows, and we've certainly been fortunate enough for the city to have some growth, that's part of the infrastructure you have to think about. As that growth comes, you got to also think about you need more police officers, you need more firemen, you need more fire stations.
Do we have enough firefighters?
Yes, I would say we do. I mean, you could always sit here and say, when I have the fire, I would love to have, hundreds. But our guys are very hardworking, very dedicated, very trained individuals. They know their job extremely well. They work efficiently. We've got exactly what ISO requires for a town of our size and for our ISO rating. So, I would say we have plenty. Plus, we have a paging system. Anytime we have a structure fire that of any magnitude, we page in off-duty personnel. So we're not only getting in more personnel to help relieve our personnel on the scene as we need to, but we got other personnel coming in to man other trucks in case there is another call, so that they can answer those calls as well.
Now, do you also work with the county?
We have a mutual aid agreement with the county. It's between the four volunteer stations that are contiguous to the city limits. I believe it's Promised Land, Highway 34, Northwest, and Carnica. And we each have a mutual aid agreement with each other that if our resources are needed, that we can call on them to come in and assist us and vice versa. We've always had a an understanding. You know, anytime there's a, even though we're in the city limits, I'm going to go ahead and make sure everybody knows this. Even though we're in the city limits and we answer calls in the city limits only, because it's paid for by the city taxpayers.
Sure.
If there's a call anywhere in Greenwood County and there's a life involved and we're aware of it, we're going to respond if there's a need. If the volunteers are already on the scene, they'll call for us if it needs us. But if we get the call and we're aware of it, we're going to respond. We're not going to sit here and say, well, that's in the county, we're not going to go. If there's a life involved, we're coming.
You know, what do you have to say about your firefighters and the dedication that it takes to be a firefighter?
It is a, I don't want to call them a rare breed, but I have found over the years, I've been with the department for 37 years, when you come in, you have a more of them coming in now that have an idea of what firefighting is because they're volunteer firemen. We hire a lot of the volunteer firemen that are out there. But we have a lot of them that come in that have no clue, like I did when I came in. And I have found that a person either loves it or hates it. There's usually no in between. You know, they're asked to put their lives on the line on a daily basis. They're asked to do a lot of things that it's not written in their job description, but they will always step up and do it. I have never anything that you know, we've asked them to do, they've always stepped up and they don't complain. They do it. They're good people. You know, they're the kind of people in a neighborhood that if you didn't even know they were firemen and you needed help, you would call one of them and he'd be there to help you. So it's they are a rare breed of individual that, you know, they don't get rich doing this. Most of them have side jobs that they do on the days off. When they come to the station, you know, they're like a big family. Because you're third of your life, you're spending there at the station. It's like their brothers that they're hanging out with, and they cut up and carry
on. Do you have any women firefighters?
We have in the past. We don't right now.
Okay.
We have had in the past. But we haven't had any applied with us at any time. I mean, basically, our requirements are fairly simple. 18 years of age and at least have a GED. Of course, we're getting a lot more now that are what we call certified firefighters. The National Fire Protection Association has a minimum standard for firefighters, and we look at Firefighter 2 certification is where we've got all of our personnel to at this point. It's just a higher standard. There's more training, certainly gives them, you know, a little bit more knowledge. And a lot of them are coming into some volunteer ranks, already certified as firefighter too. And that's amazing to me. These volunteer departments that are out there don't get tax money. Cooking hash or whatever it is, you know, people mm-hmm. donate any money for them. And they have the same responsibilities. A chief of the volunteer department has the same responsibilities and liabilities that I do. And yet they volunteer to do this on a regular basis. And, you know, that amazes me, and we're just blessed to be able to do this job and get paid for it. But there's some great individuals, and a lot of our guys are volunteers too. That's, you know, you would think that they would get enough working their job, but they
right.
don't. They get out there and volunteer in their communities as well. So that's the type of individuals that they are. They're just great people.
Absolutely. Well, we are here with Fire Chief Terry Strange for the City of Greenwood. It is pouring down rain right here at Sharp Facets Gallery, and we're going to hear a quick word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Everyone knows Sharp Facets Gallery only carries the finest in jewelry. But did you know we offer the three R's? Repairs, replacement, and restoration. Repairs from sizing to stone replacement. Restoration of your treasured pieces to their former beauty. Or revamping or restyling by resetting your stones in new mountings. All repairs are done by our master goldsmith, Richard. Only Sharp Facets Gallery can provide you with both quick turnaround and professional, reliable service. Come see us at Sharp Facets Gallery on the 72 bypass or call 229-6613.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery. I'm Ann Eller. Yes, that's right. We just got the award. This is an award-winning show now that you're on, Fire Chief Terry Strange.
Fantastic.
Yeah, we
got
the Radio Show of the Year. for the state of South Carolina.
That is fantastic. I know
Thank you. Proud. I am. We worked very hard for that. So we sure appreciate you being here today. Now, I wanted to ask you, is there any equipment that you actually feel that maybe you need that you don't have? Or what is the situation as far as the equipment with the...
No, I think we're, we've been very blessed. Our city manager and city council have been able to find the funding to get the equipment that we need. You know, there's always, you know, you'd love to have four or five of everything, but you can't do that. But we've certainly, with our new tower truck that we bought in recent years.
It was almost $1 million.
Yes, it was very, very expensive. Anytime you attach fire to anything, any name, the price goes up. We recently were awarded a FEMA grant to purchase a new hazmat truck. We actually had a retired Budweiser truck that we used for many years.
Here, have a beer. You won't feel any pain at all. There you go.
Exactly. That we used for all of our hazmat equipment. And with that FEMA grant, we were going to be getting a new one of those first of next year. And we've also got a FEMA grant for some new air packs. An air pack costs about $6,000 a piece. So we were able to purchase 32 air packs. So that's a big savings to our budget as well, that the city taxpayers don't have to incur that cost.
But we still kind of pay for that.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we do through a grant.
Federally.
But Terry, what about what happens to old equipment when you're no longer using it?
Well, equipment that we can sell, we will certainly put it out and sell it, try to get rid of whether it's vehicles or air packs or gear. A lot of our gear and helmets that we have, we offer a donate to the volunteer departments for them to use, because a lot of them have to go out there and purchase their own equipment. So we'll donate that equipment to them. But it's utilized in our community one way, either whether it's donated to volunteers or we reap the benefits of selling the equipment for our community. So,
sure. Now, one of the things that we were just talking about would be sheltering in place. And, you know, you said you didn't know if everybody knew about it, and neither did I. So what is sheltering in place, Terry?
Okay. If we were to have an incident to where we felt like there was a need to evacuate, we had a train derailment and we had a chemical of some magnitude, it had leaked out and we're concerned about the vapors. We're going to determine whether we need to try to evacuate you or shelter you in place. Sheltering in place is fairly simple. The easiest thing to do is find a room in your house, preferably this close to a restroom. Because if we ask you to shelter in place, that could be for an extended period of time. And what we ask you to do is you shut off your heating and air conditioning.
Oh, no, Terry. Now, come on here now.
I know that's tough this time of year. But if you don't, the air handling system's going to pick up whatever's out there, and it's going to pump it straight into your house. The other thing we look at is you need to consider, again, being able to grab your prescriptions very quickly and have them available to you. And the reason I say to pick one room, because you're better off if you've got some plastic and duct tape. You tape up your windows, you put the plastic over it and tape your windows. You can do the same thing around a door. Just in case the fumes do come in your house, they may not come into the room where you're at. It'll help seal it off some.
Is that a real concern for this area?
Yes.
I mean,
we have, like I said earlier, anywhere from 35 to 40 trains come through on a daily basis. That carry hazardous chemicals.
How wide an area would that be then?
It depends on the chemical. As far as you're talking about evacuating
or even sheltering in place. I don't live close to railroad tracks, am I okay?
There are chemicals out there that we're looking at an evacuation zone. I can think of several off the top of my head, 5 to 6 miles.
Oh, okay.
So, and when you're looking at that kind of length, probably looking at by the time, because it's a pie shape where it starts from the incident as it goes out and the winds pick up the fumes and spread them, it could be a very large area. It's always better if we can to shelter in place, because when sheltering in place, without having to worry about you getting out on the road and actually having to drive through this area. So there's also, if you go on the city's website, which is www.cityofgreenwoodsc.com, and go to departments, you can actually go into the fire department, click on it. We have a lot of links on there where you can go to the fire administration, places like that, and you can get a lot of information about this. You can call the fire department. We'll be glad to assist you with it. If you have a community group, want us to come out and talk to you, we'll be glad to come out and talk to you about the fire department, sheltering in place, whatever you might need.
You know, the thing about it is, I think when it comes to the fire department, we don't actually think about the fire department until you need it.
That's correct.
I mean, you know, or it's your neighbor or, you know, something
right.
real close to you.
You know, usually a fire doesn't impact most people. You know, you'll see it on the news occasionally. You may have a neighbor that it happens to. Occasionally, it may be a relative. And, you know, you see crime statistics all the time. The crime is always out there. So that's always on people's minds the most. But the fires itself are very devastating. The I know I can't remember all this off the top of my head, but in 2011, we had almost 400,000 structural fires in the United States.
And there were some big ones.
Yes.
Yes, I mean, that
yes.
come to mind. Yes, yes, some really big ones.
So it can impact you very quickly. But it is something normally, somebody says call the fire department, you know, they never thought about what the fire department does. And our guys do so much more than fight fire. You know, we've got fire prevention education. We've got a fire safety house. We have a puppet show that they do. You know, they get out in the communities and they preach fire education. We go out and teach them how to use fire extinguishers. To try to prevent the fires, you know.
Sure, and one of the things that, hey, this is WCRS right here in Greenwood. One of the things you should have is some type of exit plan in your house should something happen.
That's correct. Most people don't.
Right.
They need to plan at least two ways out of every room in your house, especially the bedroom. Do the smoke detectors work? Do they have enough smoke detectors? You should have at least one smoke detector in the hallway near your bedrooms. If you close your bedroom door, you should have one in your bedroom as well. You should test them monthly. If you got a smoke detector that's over 10 years old, you should replace it. You got to test them. You got to know whether they're working or not. Most people don't. Unfortunately, a lot of the people that die in fires that have a smoke detector, it's not a working smoke detector. You know, we have a state law in South Carolina that if somebody is in rental property, the person that owns the property is responsible for making sure that there is a working smoke detector before they rent the property to you. Now, it's your responsibility as the renter to keep it up,
right,
to maintain the batteries. But they're responsible for making sure that at least when they rent it to you the first time, there's a working smoke detector. And unfortunately, a lot of times people won't maintain them because they don't go out and buy batteries. Batteries are fairly cheap. And it has saved many, many lives.
Absolutely.
Just by the smoke detector going off. So that is probably, well, I would say the number one issue when it comes to fire deaths is people not getting informed, not aware of it. You know, cooking is probably our next biggest. Cooking is probably the number one cause. And it's usually in the evenings because the big meal's done in the evenings anymore. But it's amazing how quickly, when somebody starts cooking and they get distracted and go do something else, they're trying to multitask, they're keeping up with the children. I mean, it's just, it's tough. And the next thing you know, you got a fire.
Sure.
Now, how do they handle it? A lot of times they don't know how to handle it.
And a grease fire is different from a regular fire, so you got to be careful.
Yeah.
You know, Terry, it has been very nice of you to come out here today and talk to us.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely,
really,
and we'll have you back again. But we are out of time.
Okay.
As you know, it just seems like time flies when you're having a good time.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
But Fire Chief Terry Strange, we do appreciate you being here today. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
No, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. That's going to do it for me. Tune in tomorrow morning on the I Love Ann Show, 8 to 10. Don't miss it. We'll be having a good time. Bye-bye, everybody.